You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Hey, thank you for joining us here on the program today. We're so glad that you're going to be with us. We're going to talk a little bit about propaganda and how to keep your sanity. Take everything with a grain of salt without your blood pressure getting high. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about that. And, you know, is it World War III? We'll be back right after these messages.
Warning. This show is for adults by semi-adults, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. Our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. If you struggle to understand politics, we explain it from an independent, libertarian point of view. With all of the irreverence it deserves, we toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, Chris Spangle, a 15-year veteran of politics and media.
I am just going to be honest with you. We went so long this Saturday, we did 2 hours, that I'm breaking it into two extra episodes. So if it sounds a little funky in the transition, that's why. But just wanted to thank everybody for listening to the program here on the show. Today joining me is Harry Price, Tricia Stewart-Mann, Von Spargler, and Reinhold will also be with us. We are talking about propaganda. We're going to talk about how you can just keep your sanity as there is a lead up to war. And then part two is basically, is it World War III? What should we do? What are we going to do? That may be part one. I probably should do that one first just in case the war breaks out before the weekend's over. Like, things are changing quickly. So I've got a COVID episode from 3 weeks ago that I haven't posted because it's just not the right time now. But before we start, I want to thank all of the members of Wall Plus. They're the reason the show and the network exist. And you can get all kinds of great benefits for subscribing. Things like a Wednesday show for patrons, ad-free. And I want to thank especially our $100 a month members, John Pasilo, Lars Nordskog, Jake Edel, Matthew Durbin, Reinhold, Christy Avery, and Jason Doolittle. So thanks for being with us today. Let's get on with the show. Welcome back to the Chris Spangle Show. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you listening to those commercials. It does help us. We really do appreciate your support. We are facing our 10th anniversary for 10 more years of the Chris Spangle Show and We Are Libertarians. Join our Patreon at joinwallplus.com and choose the $10 level to celebrate 10 years. We really do appreciate it. It's a great way to give value back to the network. It supports people like Gingerarchy with Tricia Stewart-Mann and Low Key Wall with Harry and Reinhold and Paradox and The Brian Nichols Show and Remzo Martinez and Off and On the Run, not Off the Run. Sometimes, you know, Remzo gets a little off the run.
Yes.
But Harry's Low Key Wall discussion the night of the State of the Union was really fun. So make sure you go check out that podcast and listen to that. Now, is it World War III? I think we need to be very clear-eyed about who Putin is and what Putin wants and what he's willing to do. And a lot of times libertarians fall into the trap of blaming American foreign policy and never seem to get around to recognizing that this is a madman. And because they feel if they say that this is an evil madman who's bent on taking over countries and killing people, then somehow you are siding with American foreign policy, and I don't believe that. You have to be clear-eyed. You have to be a realist about foreign policy and where we're going. And by the same token, you have to be open and accept that America and NATO and the European Union have done things that have led us to this point. I'll put a couple videos in the show notes that you can go and check that out. I'm going to, I think it's Vaughn that kind of has like a little whoosh in the background. Yeah. So Vaughn, just unmute yourself when you're ready to talk. There's like a little fuzzy static. So this week they put sanctions on Russia, and we talked a little bit. I think we talked about it on the show. I talk a lot. I don't know what I said when, but to give you an update, we imposed sanctions on Russia this week, and basically initiated economic warfare on the country of Russia. And I was watching the news this week about the sanctions, and what was... Harry, fuck off. You have to be watching the video on YouTube. So I'm watching the television about the sanctions, and basically what happened is they sanctioned several banks, not the largest Russian banks, but some of the Russian banks that apparently have bad actors. And you saw one of the investors in one of these banks was the Kentucky teachers unions, which went from like $13 million to $700,000 overnight. And of course, Twitter was blaming Moscow Mitch and Rand Paul and not Joe Biden, who implemented the sanctions. So why are you blaming the two guys that probably had nothing to do with it instead of the guy that actually had something to do with it? So when you put these sanctions in and you take us out of the SWIFT system, it has a lot of effects. And, you know, I'm sitting here going, huh, you know, if the choice is economic sanctions and military action, you know, I guess I'm going to go with sanctions. And I know sanctions don't really work, and we've sanctioned Iran, and they've been out of SWIFT since 2018, 2017, and they haven't really changed or done anything different. Same in North Korea, and Russia has been sanctioned because, oh, by the way, you Putin apologist, he's invaded Georgia and Ukraine before and has caused massive violence in Syria and Venezuela and all these other places. And he's a foreign interventionist, and yet you can't seem to dislike that foreign interventionist. And it hasn't stopped him or deterred him, but maybe these sanctions will work this time. If only we do it again, it'll work. You know, so as long as we don't go to war with them. And then I'm sitting there going, well, if I'm a Russian, and I'm just like my friends that I met on the honeymoon, just like two really nice people, middle-class Russians, don't really like politics, don't really pay attention to the news, kind of know that it's all BS, but they're just trying to make a few dollars to get a better house and have some kids and travel the world a little bit. And then all of a sudden they wake up one day and their credit card doesn't work and their job isn't paying them. And they're not able to do all kinds of things that they want to do, and upward mobility stops because of Putin. Would I not then turn on the television to figure out what's going on? If I'm not a normally informed person, and then will I be told by Vladimir Putin that the West hates you? See, I've been telling you this. They're after us. Russians must fight. You have to join with the Kremlin because this is an act of war. And doesn't that drive Russians further into Putin's arms as opposed to causing regime change? Because if you don't think these sanctions weren't meant to cause regime change, you're crazy. The point was to so cripple the Russian economy, cause them to lose 30% of their savings overnight, that they all ended up... I'm getting like a weird thing, guys, so I'm going to just mute everybody and see if it's me. So if you didn't think that the point of the sanctions was to cause such devastating economic consequences within the border of Russia that the oligarchs and the people overthrew Putin, you're crazy. Well, that's a bold move. Maybe that works. Maybe that happens. The oligarchs, you know, there was an oligarch killed in London this week who was starting to make noise that he was unhappy. They're starting to turn up dead. You start messing with people's money, they do get violent, right? Oh, when you start messing with people's money, they get violent. Maybe they don't act the way that you think that they ought to act. So it could just be another miscalculation from the West in their handling of Putin. But the problem is there's nothing that's going to stop Vladimir Putin. As long as Vladimir Putin is president of that country, he will keep invading countries. He will keep trying to fight the West because that is who he is. He is, you like, man, watching some of the pro-Putin friends that I have, some of the alt-right people that I kind of monitor, they really sound like cops when my friend Amanda, in Amanda's story in the past, like, you know, she's being abused by her husband and the cops show up and they go, well, maybe we could have caught him peeping in your windows if you had shaken your boobs at him. See ya. Bye. Have fun. You know, like, there's like a real blame the victim mentality around Russia, Putin, and some of these folks. So you know, so you have to just accept that the sanctions are an escalation on the Russian side. And the no-fly zone is being discussed. This is an escalation. It's not a magical umbrella that will pop over Ukraine that Russian planes will bounce off of like Stephen King's The Dome. It is American military planes, European military planes circling the country and actively engaging with Russian fighter jets when they enter the territory. How is that not an escalation that puts us in direct combat with Russia? You are going to be hearing all kinds of information over the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks about the no-fly zone. And you're going to be told that it's a magic umbrella. It's war. Like, there's no way around it. So you can support it, but let's not lie about it. Let's be clear-eyed about what this is. So Vladimir Putin, right before we went on, the New York Times reported about Vladimir Putin and his response to the sanctions. And so I'm going to read that article to you before we go to the panel here. So this comes from the New York Times. Let's see here. All right. President Vladimir Putin of Russia on Saturday stepped up his... Oh, where did my cursor go? Sorry. All right. I've got like three screens. It's a mess. I don't know where my cursor went. I'm very confused. I feel like I'm giving the State of the Union address right now. Okay, come over here. All right, there we go.
I thought Mac OS, if you shake it, you know, the cursor gets big.
It's not when you pee. President Vladimir Putin of Russia on Saturday upped his rhetoric by describing the Western sanctions imposed against Russia since his military invasion of Ukraine as akin to a declaration of war, and warning that Ukraine might lose its statehood if leaders continue to resist his military invasion of the country. The current leadership needs to understand that if they continue doing what they are doing, they risk the future of the Ukrainian statehood, he said in a meeting in Moscow. If that happens, he said, they will have to be blamed for that. Well, that's classic gaslighting from V. Putin over here. He loves to, what did he say yesterday that was just like hilarious? He said something along the lines of like, no, we're in Russia, but it's just like to be nice to people. Like, we're here to help them. You know, he constantly says the opposite loudly and forcefully and repeatedly. And he's lying. He appeared to outline his military tactics while threatening that any no-fly zone, as Ukrainian officials have called for in recent days, would have devastating consequences, said the head of the largest reserve of nuclear weapon owners. Warehouses with weapons and ammunition, aviation, air defense systems. It takes time to destroy air defenses. This work is practically done. That's why there are demands to impose a no-fly zone. The realization of that demand would bring catastrophic results not only to Europe, but to the whole world. So basically, I've already destroyed their air defenses. That's why they want this. And if you come and help them, there will be consequences. We hear calls to impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine. It is impossible to do that from Ukrainian territory. It can only be done from the territory of other states. But any moves in such direction will be seen by us as participation in an armed conflict by the country that will create threats to our servicemen. He reiterated his earlier points about the need to protect the Russian-speaking population of Ukraine, much of which has fled to Russia since the start of the war. So, our proposals are on the table with a group of negotiators from Kyiv. Hopefully they will respond positively to that. Putin's demands are give me Donbass, Luhansk, and Crimea permanently, and that Ukraine must completely demilitarize. That's never going to happen. He's making insane demands that no one will agree to. And so these peace talks are total BS. Although rumors have swirled through Russia in recent days of impending martial law, conscription, and closed borders because of the war, Putin stressed that Russia did not plan to impose martial law unless there was aggression against Russian territory, which he considers to be Ukraine. He also vowed that conscription would not be an issue. Only professional military servicemen take part in this operation, officers and contract soldiers. Not a single conscript takes part in it, and we don't plan to send them there. Demonstrably false. We've seen repeated use of conscripted soldiers on Twitter videos and through these various conversations. Our army will solve all tasks. I don't doubt it for a second. This is confirmed by how the operation is ongoing. Everything is being done according to plan as the general staff planned it. Doubt that's true. It's the rainy season in Ukraine, and their trucks are getting stuck because they didn't take proper care of their equipment, because there's so much corruption in the Russian military that their equipment doesn't work. And one person said, even if they launched a full-scale nuclear attack, 3 out of 100 of these nuclear warheads will actually ever work, will reach their destination, and they're kind of failing. Now, I let's start with Harry, due to seniority. The world's largest nuclear holder, this madman of aggression who's invaded multiple countries, is saying, if you continue to help them, there will be consequences for us all. Should I be panicking, or will the Russian military fall apart and have to retreat? Like, what's going to happen? How worried should we be that World War III is happening?
Well, okay, so the thing is with the whole World War III thing, how you know you're not already in it? How you know it's already started? How you know it didn't start like a year ago? Because the history books, which will be written, hopefully be written, you know, in the future, will probably say that, you know, we probably are, and the war actually started, you know, 2014. We just didn't realize it, you know, because if we're in a different, like, generational war tactic. Like, this is fifth, you know, because we've been in which aspect, like, a fifth generational war tactic for a long time. That's the main aspect, because, like, it's not, we're in such a different, like, age that, you know, war isn't done by with like a lot of done by guns and tanks. Like, you see this is happening, but what's really being more effective is the information war.
Well, so Trisha said online, world's
propaganda sowing distrust each person's side, you know.
Yeah, so essentially you're exactly right. Like, Glenn Beck used to say all the time that when the history books are written, the Tunisian fruit vendor that lit himself on fire in 2011 was the Franz Ferdinand moment, because it lit off the Arab Spring, and that the Arab Spring would then rush across the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And we've seen places like, you know, Trump and Britain, you know, Trump here and Brexit in Britain, and just, you know, constantly roiling through. And that's what you always have to listen to the person who's closest to the abuser. Like, it's one thing for you to say, you know, this guy is really nice to me. I don't understand what you're saying. He can't possibly be that way because I see him differently than you. But you've never been on the other side. You've never been the person he hates. You've never been the subject of abuse because he needs you. He likes you. He treats you with respect, and he doesn't want to present that face to you. And every one of the Ukrainians that I see talking about this stuff, Harry, all say, this is World War III. You can choose to admit it or not. You can choose to appease him or not. You know, he is the second largest military, largest holder of nuclear weapons is Russia, Trisha. So she asked me to clarify that. They have more.
It's not us.
No, they have more nuclear weapons than we do. Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah, I don't know.
We have more working nuclear weapons, and ours are on floppy disks. So.
Which is, hold on, but if it's not broke, don't fix it. The other thing with it, like, our nukes are in different spots. And also not our nukes. This also preface. I try to get.
They're in like 200 some places.
Yeah, I try to get us nukes, but we can't get them. They're United States military's nukes, not our nukes. because like the use of getting uranium to make a nuke is very, very expensive. And it's at the exact same time the Soviet Union was running out of gas and building all this stuff up, and they botched Chernobyl. So, like, if these are Soviet era and they really haven't, like, updated them in the last 30 effing years, like, so we, you know, yes. And that's why, like, I was messaging with Ryan, talking about, like, you know, what be the maintenance costs on that many nukes? How hard and difficult is it to maintain all that? You know, like, and the expertise, the knowledge base to maintain all that. Like, because if you have the knowledge to maintain a nuclear stockpile, like, is the Russian government paying you enough? Because you could probably make money doing something else. Because I'm sure Elon Musk will pay you a lot more if you know how to do, you know, anything with that. If you don't have pride for your country, you can just go work for SpaceX. Get the heck out.
Hey, Harry, check your microphone out. I think you might be on your computer, Mike. Trisha, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah. Just going back to that, I know that it says maybe on paper, but I have to think that we have more nuclear weapons. I mean, maybe it's American propaganda that's telling us, to, you know, that Russia does.
It's the UN. We can trust them.
Nope. Yes. But
it's also Russian propaganda.
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
Yeah. Right. It's also true.
It would make
true.
Sense for both, you know, Russia and the U.S. to lie about that.
Well, correct.
Go ahead, Harry, then Reinhold.
I'll just say, like, well, all countries lie about, like, their numbers. Like, Russia said, like, they only got 500 casualties. This thing, this is exactly the time when China talked about it only has so many different casualties when it's fighting.
Or when a guy tells you he's 6 foot tall and you meet him and he's like 5'9".
Yeah, I hate that. Which sucks if you're actually 6 foot tall and people go like, you're not 6 foot. You stand up like, I'm actually 6 foot. That's what I am.
He's actually kind of short too, by the way.
Reinhold?
Better for judo.
So the point about Chernobyl is an interesting one to make too, that we talk about they have nuclear bombs, but how many of them have we seen them actually use and how they function? And even if they work right, because we've seen their nuclear engineering with Chernobyl, which was terrible. Mm-hmm. It was so decrepit, and they also went through a series of bad procedures that they shouldn't have done, trying to get a test completed, which caused that whole thing to melt down anyway. But it's just bad design. So who's to say that all these weapons actually could even fire, even back in the day when they were made, let alone 30, 40, 50 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cause again, we have confirmed tests that they have, like, working ones and stuff like that when they do their tests. But even the United States military, when they launched the nukes on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, like, they still believed that that thing was going to hit the ground and just be a big boom. That's it. It wasn't really going to work. They had no idea.
And that was the only two they had too. I mean, they couldn't even throw in a third one because they didn't have one built.
Right. Cause like the idea, like, you have to, like, enrich this much rated because you're not getting, like, finding U-235 out in the wild is freaking rare as all heck. Right. So you're getting, like, crappy uranium, having to sit there and enrich it, and you're getting a little bit at a time, which that's expensive to even get the enrichment process to even get that freaking uranium to even make one of these things. And the idea, the absurdity that, like, we've got thousands of nuclear weapons. We have, like, really? Come on.
Yeah, I guess the thing, one of the lessons I took away from COVID is that I tend to think other people are rational like me, and, like, people, when they're presented with facts, will make, like, correct decisions. And that governments tend to be governed by the kind of the middle, not the extremes. So I can't rule out that Putin will do the exact, like, I thought he was just putting troops, you know, 70% of his army on the border in order to pressure NATO to not admit Ukraine. I never expected that he would actually invade the whole country. You know, I thought he would roll in and occupy, maybe he would occupy those two other areas. He would hold them and effectively take them over like he did Crimea, because the world didn't do anything last time. Why wouldn't they just let him take these other two areas? They're Russian speaking anyways. But instead, he, like, went harder than I thought. So I think people will make the mistake, and you will see a lot of analysts on cable news make the mistake that Putin's a nut job. That Putin's not sane, that Putin's losing it. Like, Putin, I definitely think there's something going on there. I don't know what it is. He's definitely a COVID freak sitting far away and getting isolated. And maybe that's clouding his judgment. But, you know, that this is another thing against the people like, oh, the West caused Putin to invade argument. Like, the guy gave a speech 2 days before he did it for 55 minutes talking about how Ukraine belonged to him. Like, he's not an irrational person. He told Bush years ago that Ukraine's not like a real country, and that he's told every president from Bush on that he wants Ukraine, that it belongs to him. Like, he has a plan. He's very consistent with this stuff. He's acting in a rational manner to him. So the use of nuclear weapons to me seems completely irrational. Like, nobody would ever use a nuclear weapon. So therefore, Vladimir Putin could never use a nuclear weapon. That would be crazy. The Russian military wouldn't let it happen, knowing the consequences. But I have to factor in the fact that Vladimir Putin's rationality is far different from mine. And going back to the abuser situation, like, you know, I would say to Amanda, like, I don't get it. This is I can't figure out this. And she's like, if you try to figure out crazy, you're going to go crazy. You just have to accept that this person's not operating on the same level of rationality, but is still intelligent and going to make moves against you that don't make sense to you. So I think we have to look at it through that lens. But I think, Vaughn, like the chances of nuclear weapons is not zero, but like 0.00005%. But I reserve the right to be wrong based on that information. But I don't think that people should be scared that this is going to turn into a nuclear war.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about mutually assured destruction is it's not so mutual anymore. The U.S. has a lot of anti-nuclear missile technologies they've been developing for the past 30 or 40 years, number one. But number two, if the Russians aren't even able to maintain the tires on the vehicles they're invading Ukraine with right now, and that's why they can't go off-road, then what makes us think they're maintaining all those thousands of nukes?
Yeah. It's exactly also, right.
Right.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Rubber. That those nukes weren't stolen during the fall of the Russian Empire back in the 90s. There was a lot of questions at the time about where those nukes were and who had them.
Yeah.
And we don't know who's got a lot of those.
Well, Ukraine had some of them, and then they gave them to Russia because the U.S. promised to protect them.
Fools.
If Russia tried to invade.
Yeah, there was a treaty, a whole treaty. And everybody's like, why don't we just sign a treaty with Russia? And I'm like, we did. And they completely ignored it.
Russia just keeps breaking every treaty. Yeah. And then they break every treaty and they're like, Ukrainians broke Minsk. Like, no, you did. No, I didn't. You did. I'm rubber. You're glue. Trisha?
That is actually a pretty decent, like, Russian accent, Chris.
Yeah.
I don't know. We a lot of the things that we're blaming Russia now, and I know people are probably going to think I'm some kind of Russian sympathizer, and I'm not, are things that we do times 1,000. So I just, the irony of it, I'm not saying, as you said, Chris, this doesn't justify Vladimir Putin, but it needs to be put in perspective. It needs to be put in perspective that, yes, we go and we mess with crazy people, and then just like the meme where he turns around and shoots, and then all of a sudden the crazy person ends up doing something crazy. And we're like, oh my gosh, I did not see that coming. Wonder why he did that. And it's like, just because we're not directly responsible for somebody's actions shouldn't mean that we should, you know, push and poke. You don't poke the bear. And we should take some responsibility in the fact that we poke all over the world. And if we stopped doing that and we stopped putting sanctions, because sanctions never hurt the intended person, Vladimir Putin and anybody evil, any evil oligarch, is not really going to be that affected by sanctions. The people that live there will be. And it's not going to change his mind. So I think we should take, I disagree a little bit in the point where we just are constantly talking about how evil Russia is when there's a reason they got to the place that they are.
All right. So let's open the NATO debate, because the reason I wanted Trisha on is because she's the most hardcore out of our group and all this stuff. Like, you heard her last week say, nah, I don't think Northrop Grumman should be allowed to sell weapons to Ukraine. Like, I mean, I get not wanting the government to do it and have taxpayers use it, but, you know, like, they have a right to self-determination and defense, and, like, they're fighting for their sovereignty. They're fighting to not live under a regime that will, you know, censor them and delete their lives and freeze their bank accounts if they disagree with the if Putin invades a NATO country, Trisha, we have a treaty with NATO, and this is a defense pact, because countries like Estonia and Poland and some of these other countries, they don't have a military that's big enough to fight Russian aggression. The plain fact is that Russia, we can talk about American foreign policy. I don't know that I agree that we are 10 times worse in aggression. But like, if Russia were to invade Estonia, the point of NATO is that, and there's a fighting chance. that the overwhelming force of the United States and the European countries is a deterrent in the way that nuclear weapons are a deterrent to keep Putin from invading those countries. And if NATO didn't exist, he'd invade them. I have no doubt about it. It's why he invaded Ukraine and Georgia. They're not in NATO. They're not part of the European Union. And so, but he's not going into Poland. He's not going into, you know, the Baltic states or some of the Balkan states that have NATO alliances. So what is the problem with having an alliance with these countries that is a deterrent for them?
So I don't think in essence, like having an alliance like that and, you know, making it so you're avoiding war is a bad thing. The problem is how they use it. So just like the United States selling weapons, do I trust the United States selling people weapons? No, it's a horrible idea because whatever they say their intentions are, aren't their intentions. And as far as NATO goes, we dangled it over Ukraine's head. Ukraine literally thought we're quoted. Oh yes, we're going to join NATO. You know, when the Civil War started there, I believe this 2014. But so I just think even one thing I did like that Donald Trump said, which maybe he shouldn't have said out loud, but there's a lot of things he said out loud he shouldn't have said.
Always had like a tenuous grasp of facts. Yes. And so like he's like Alex Jones. Like if you go and look at where he got that piece of information, maybe it might be right. Like Trump said a lot of things that were true, but he said it very poorly.
So when he said he might not even, you know, go to war if somebody did invade a NATO country. Now, he probably shouldn't have said that out loud, but honestly, it's the right thinking. NATO needs to die in our lifetime, I think.
But doesn't that invite more countries to be invaded and more kids to be killed and more nuclear power plants to be bombed and orphanages to be blown up?
No, because that happens on our watch times quite a bit more. It would just be a different person doing it instead of the United States, so...
Anybody else want to jump in? Go ahead, Vaughn.
I was going to say, I think Chris has got one point that we do need to pay attention to is that the U.S. is involved in a lot of stuff we shouldn't be involved in as well. And if you look at the propaganda that Putin is using, the word choices he's using, the way he's talking about the invasion of Ukraine, he's using a lot of the same words and talking about it in the same way that we often, as the U.S., and I don't know why I'm saying we, but how the U.S. often talks about their invasions or they're helping various groups in different areas. Because Putin, on Russian TV, it is illegal right now to refer to this as a war. It's not a war. It's a military action. He is intervening to save the Ukrainians from the Nazis, according to his propaganda, which sounds a lot like the reasons that the U.S., said they were going to go into various places like Afghanistan or Iraq. And so even though, yes, Putin is evil, Putin is doing very bad things, but because the U.S. has done similar things in the past, it gives him cover and it makes it easier for him to justify it.
That video that I told you about that Lou Rockwell's website posted was literally just a greatest hits of American atrocities. And where do you get the moral authority to tell us that we can't do the same thing? The logic is ridiculous because... if you're you're this YouTuber saying all these bad things that the Americans did to all these other countries are very bad, so that justifies us doing the exact same things. Like, it's very stupid logic. It's not coming from a place like of principle where peace is the greatest principle. It's
you did bad things, so I can do bad things.
We get to hurt people and break things too because you do it, and you know it doesn't matter how. Of a greater magnitude, we do it towards civilians because you killed 15 people in a wedding in Yemen. We get to kill 5,000 people in a day in Ukraine. Like it's the logic doesn't make sense when you see these people. But that's the importance of reining in American foreign policy so that you no longer lose your moral authority, Harry. You aren't the country that created Gitmo. You aren't the country. How do you, and this is what John Mearsheimer, a video that I'll put in the thing said. He's like, how do you, after the Bush Doctrine, claim moral authority? Like how, and we see it now, like how does Canada and Australia get to lecture Putin and the world about freedom? Like how I just I don't think a lot of Western citizens take their government seriously when they're talking about their commitment to freedom and protecting life, when our governments engage in a lot of the same behaviors, be it at a smaller magnitude or a greater magnitude, it doesn't really matter. You've opened yourself up to that criticism, Harry.
Right. Yeah. We, just like these, a lot of the police departments in the United States have lost a lot of the moral high grounds and fought really and have to fight really hard to get some of that back. The United States has to do the exact same thing. You can't tell people they can't do things when you have done the same thing. You're right. You lost that part of the table and you put that chink in your armor. So people are able to throw that thing back at you, or like you're doing the exact same thing right now somewhere else.
Yeah. The importance of the liberal, so just to break it down, because the polls are basically authoritarian capitalism in China and Russia and other smaller states, and Western liberal states, Western democratic liberalism, capitalism, and liberalism at its core demands that you respect rights. And so the thinking of the Bush Doctrine was, if we go to these countries in the Middle East and give them democratic liberal capitalism, then they won't fight with each other as much. They won't fight with us as much, because the theory is that liberal states don't engage in conflict with each other as nearly as often as like authoritarian states do. So the flaw in that is that how do you go and try to introduce a theory of government based around human rights and respecting the individual while doing things in those countries, Reinhold, that then diminish your authority as saying that you're a respecter of human rights?
Oh, it makes us look hypocritical. But the way to deal with that is not to ignore the plight of others when they're in trouble and need help. It's to, next time we get into this situation, we stop doing it. We check ourselves. We learn from that. But just like if you had a neighbor who was getting harassed by someone down the street or someone across the in another neighborhood or something like that, getting harassed and tried to, you know, get them to give them their property, and they finally just say, heck with it, we're going to move into this property, we're going to take it over, we're going to put you in someplace and lock you up, to the neighbor, would you not defend that neighbor from that action? Right? Whether or not you've had any moral high ground to do that or not, you still want to help your neighbor. And that's really what NATO is supposed to be. Now, the problem with NATO is that it turned out to be a way for the United States to exert influence over Europe by being the provider of their defense. Instead of requiring everybody in NATO to defend each other, it turned into a United States defending everybody. Yep. And that's why our military spending is so high, which really makes our United States arms manufacturers really happy. But it does put us in that power situation that we have a little bit of addiction to. We want that power. We want to be the ones calling the shots. And at some point you have to say, Europe has to kind of take care of itself. We need to help them. But right now the solution isn't United States going in and doing a no-fly zone. It might be Eastern Europe getting together, or NATO, EU countries getting together and doing that. What do you do to stop the aggression of Russia into this point? Whether, all the other discussion kind of goes out of the window at that point. You have to find a solution. And then we need to learn from this one. So we need to take a really hard look at this once it's over, which I don't think it's going to turn into World War III. I think it's going to be a resolution. I think people are going to come together and push back the aggression. But we need to learn from that. We can't be the ones doing that all the time either.
Vaughn, then Harry, then Tricia.
Okay. I mean, I think, honestly, if Putin could make this World War III, he would. I mean, he's aggressive. He wants to take all of Eastern Europe. He wants to remake the Russian Empire from before the Soviet Union. But the reason I don't think it's going to get to that level, at least kinetically, is because he just doesn't have the manpower, and he doesn't have the equipment, and he doesn't have the finances.
Also doesn't have the world support either, because even his allies are turning on him right now.
Yeah, I mean,
China, Lukashenko in Belarus came out and said that he was not going to send his soldiers in. Like, the sanctions effectively scared Belarus out of being his only ally in this.
Yeah. I mean, China's basically doing the whole, you went to a party with a group of friends and then one of your friends starts a fight and you're like, I don't know him.
Yeah, Harry, go ahead.
Yeah, if Russia really, like, because like China's being very careful on how they support Russia, and because they allow, like, on Weibo and stuff like that, the Chinese people are talking about how they like Putin and stuff like that. They got that military support. But just like China, Russia has the same problem of like the shrinking population issue. So if you lose like active male soldiers, there's not many, there's not thousands more that you can replace them for. And just like China, they're getting to the point where they don't have many men or like soldiers that actually have actual combat experience. So they're losing a lot of that. So their actual combat troops are getting spread out. And if you lose too many in this little skirmish, World War III is kind of hard to do when you've got a, you know, you just don't have many people who have actual combat experience who have been in the two-way rifle range. But the other thing with the no-fly zone, makes no sense. It'd be different if because it's just about Russia. The no-fly zone would kind of make sense if Ukraine also had had jets. And they're out there shooting each other, and they were crashing, bombing into cities, killing people. But, okay, you guys' jets are hurting innocent civilians that are around this thing. How about you put the jets down, okay? That would kind of make sense. But it's just, the other thing is just they all have the ability to defend themselves. And you have disarmed and messed with your entire populace for so long. It's like, this is almost, you know, and you're in this position anyways because you've weakened your own populace. You know, like, because Ukraine is not this bastion of liberty or anything else. Like, I think on the World Economic, like, what, freedom, something, this thing was in the deep 100s, like worse than Russia in the types of freedom in Ukraine.
Well, they've switched back and forth. Yeah, they're like, the guy that Zelensky took over for was a Putin puppet. But didn't you say, Reinhold, at one point that they had libertarianism in one of the parties? That, what was that about?
Zelensky announced that he was going to form, when he got elected, that his party was going to form as a libertarian party.
Really?
And that lasted about 6 months.
Right, of course.
Because there was concern that a lot of people in the outside the cities would even know what libertarianism is.
So it became more of an anarchist.
it became more of a combination of center socialist ideology, but it's still a little hint of libertarianism in there. They want to have that in there, but it's not prevalent state now. Sure. And there's some political changeover that's kind of changed that now. But there was a period of time, about 6 months, where they were touting that they were going to be a libertarian party. So.
Oh, yeah.
Trisha?
Yeah, I honestly don't think World War III is likely. You know, you go through these times where you're scared and you worry about, and you think about China. And honestly, I mean, that's something to worry about. But it doesn't make a lot of rational and logical sense. But then I keep going back to something my friend Chris says. That other people don't act rationally and logically. So I suppose it's a possibility, but right now I don't think it's looking like that. So I think a lot of this doesn't make a lot of sense to me on the part of Russia, which either means they just got in too deep and had too much hubris, or that they know something we don't. I don't know which one is more likely.
It's the hubris, because we do the same thing. We think that we have the ability to manipulate a disease in a lab and that it won't escape. We believe that we have, as human beings, the ability to fight that virus when it then escapes. We have the ability to start a war on drugs and end drug use. The ironclad principle of government is that, yes, everybody cares and wants to do something. We need to do more. And then when they do it, collective action fails because central planning fails. Because it centralizes decision-making under a group of experts who aren't able to see all the different things that are needed. It's the pricing system. It's the market system that negotiates all of these different signals from around the world. And peace acts much the same way. And the more you try to decentralize decision-making around Joe Biden, Macron, the German government, like the German government... What you guys need to know about the German government is how deeply embedded Putin and his decisions were in this. Like the Gerhard Schröder, I don't know if I said that correctly, he was the German chancellor before Angela Merkel. That guy's on the board of a Russian oil company now. And Angela Merkel is the one that blocked all kinds of different sanctions. Like, Germany is incredibly up to their eyeballs in need of Russian oil and natural gas to survive, because Gerhard Schroeder and Angela Merkel continually killed nuclear power. Like, the French use nuclear power, and they're not as dependent on the Russians. And so, is Schroeder just like a puppet of Putin, who's in charge of a Western liberal democracy that's keeping spending for NATO artificially low? Well, I got this article that I want to kind of expand on, but it was basically talking about how this is their 9/11 in Europe. That, you know, that Osama bin Laden is out there, you have the coal bombings, you have things that kind of give, you know, there's always the dissenters like the John Mearsheims or the Gary, not Mearsheim, Kasparov, Gary Kasparov, the chess guy. His book, Winter is Coming, is really interesting from the Putin is evil, you need to stop him perspective. Really well written. So anytime you see Kasparov, like, he was basically this chess champion, famous in Russia, joined the opposition, Navalny. Anna, in our comments, who is from Macedonia in the Balkans, said, watch Navalny's YouTube channel. He joined the opposition. He's a guy who has met Putin, fought against Putin, been very, clear-eyed on who this guy is and what he's doing. And I would say that, like, liberal-leaning journalists and Western journalists fleeing Russia in the last 3 days is not a sign that the protests are going to work. That they'd be staying to help if that there was a chance. You've got to listen to the people closest to this stuff. But Kasparov has basically been saying hard power is all that Putin understands. Hard power is force. It's violence. It's war. Soft power is economic influences and sanctions. It's what we prefer to do because we don't like seeing our boys come back in body bags. Putin doesn't care about that. Vladimir Putin does not care how he looks to the West. He's like Donald Trump in the press. The worse you hate me, the better I look to the people that love me. And that is who Vladimir Putin is in NATO. Vladimir Putin is watching the United Nations pass a resolution condemning him with an overwhelming percentage while he is beating his dick. It makes him hard. He loves it. He does not care about the UN poo-pooing him and wagging their finger at him. He understands hard power. And because of that, the West miscalculated who this guy is, tried to bring him into the fold. This is Kasparov's argument, and I think it's a fairly good one. We have thought that we could bring in Vladimir Putin and the Chinese and give them all kinds of, get them hooked on, the World Trade Organization and capitalism. And if we enrich these countries, then they'll want to endear themselves to liberal capitalism. And it was a mistake because Z and Putin understand hard power. They are the same thinking as the little dictator in North Korea, Kim Jong-un. Like, he only understands hard power. And you basically fed the beast. Now the beast is big and the beast is biting you. It's like Siegfried and Roy Vaughn. That's the lesson. You feed the tiger, you pet the tiger, it loves me, and then it bites your face off one day. And that's kind of how Vladimir Putin is. We need to understand that, like, this guy just understands hard power, and we have to... I'm all in favor of us, canceling him, right? Like, in some ways, like, private corporations saying we're no longer going to do business with Russia is a good thing. You're muted. Go ahead, Vaughn.
All right, I'm unmuted. Sorry. My dog just started barking too, so okay. I was having problems. But the one hesitancy I have about private corporations going after Russia is, as long as they're going after Putin and his stooges, I'm okay with that. But I'm really starting to get squeamish about how I'm seeing people ban things just because they're Russian.
The Freedom Fries effect.
Yeah, like, some college in, I believe it was Italy, canceled a class on Dostoevsky, which has absolutely nothing to do with the war. And it reminds me of what the U.S. did to the Japanese in World War II. And I don't like that direction, because I've known a lot of Russian people and they are wonderful people. And why are we punishing them for something some crazy guy does in a country that they used to live in or their grandparents used to live in? That doesn't make any sense. And all that's doing is helping feed the propaganda machine of Putin. It's giving him more ammunition, because now he can show Westerners saying, oh, we're going to ban this and we're going to ban this. We hate Russia, blah, 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 blah. And that just helps him. We need to stop giving him the propaganda.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Let me go ahead, Harry, and then I'm going to pivot to something else.
I was just going to say, like, Vaughn hates American tradition. It's our tradition to do this, okay?
I told you he's the pastor of disaster.
We are going to get to round up white people and put them in camps. It's good. And how dare you stop this, okay?
I would say that, you know, being clear-eyed about Putin and that he's not going to stop, and that we've got to deal with him in some way. Do you and I personally have to deal with him? Does America have to deal with him? Does Europe have to deal with him? Who has to do what about a situation where you have a madman dictator who's hell-bent on taking over other countries? And this is going to be the question of, we need to do more over the next few weeks if he is actually going to just start massively bombing cities, and he's just kind of preparing for the second wave of this. What do we do? What does the world do? Who needs to do what? How do we handle it? Let's start with Trisha, the hardcore over here, and get her opinion first.
We as the United States, or us as private citizens?
Let's go with both.
Okay. So the United States needs to not do anything for once in its life.
But there's children being killed.
Well, I mean, I'm not a fan of, like, using taxpayer funds to send aid, but humanitarian aid, I wouldn't say, is the worst thing that a country could do. Private citizens, I know that there's some gun drives for Ukrainians, which I think is kind of cool. The government could stay out of the way of that. That would be something it could do or not do. But we need to not do anything and then step back. And 10 years from now, we're going to look back and think that was the best thing we ever did. It's just really hard to not do something.
But what happens if he goes and kills Moldovans next?
Okay. I hope he doesn't. But once we insert ourselves into that situation, it's going to make it worse. You know, just because I don't like that whole idea of something evil is happening somewhere, so it's my fault if I don't do something. That's kind of that's a dangerous road, and it's a dangerous path, especially when you're the United States of America, because over and over, when we do something, worse things happen.
Harry, why is she a paid Putin asset? Why does she work for Russia?
Well, as we know that Trisha is leaving the Wall Network next month to go join that Russian oil board.
This has been my plan the whole time.
All right. Putin's known to be a big fan of this show, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Big fan.
He sent me a starter pack. I've got my mug up here with Pooty Poot. Trisha makes a good point, is that we want to do something. It feels like the right thing to do, to help, to do something, to send soldiers over there. But
there's skirmishes like this everywhere. There's tons of different people that we can help. Like, if you really want to help something, I don't know, just start selling statehood to South American countries. If you want to really want to do something, you know, there's stuff, there's bad things that are happening below like the United States' border and inside its own border. If there's something you want to do, you want to help some lives, cool. Decriminalize, you know, start decriminalizing things, remove some laws off the books. You can save a lot of people's lives, you know, here in our own borders. Now that may say like, oh, you're just an isolationist in a public, like, no, like that cop that there, yes, there's armed conflict happening over there
in your also mouth. In another, there's armed conflict happening with that tongue.
There's also like coming in Africa. There's stuff happening there. You know, there's stuff in like the Southeast Asian countries. If you really want to do something, you can help police African water from China from overfishing inside of there. And the Belt and Road Initiative is incorrectly like destroys other nations around Africa in the Middle East.
Yeah, where does it stop? And Vaughn, I think the reason that we care about it is because Zelensky's on TV and. Like, to be honest, it's a Western Christian nation with white faces. The Ukrainians have a lot of contacts here. We know, you know, like, we care about it more than Yemen because it's right in front of our face. It's right in front of, it's on our screens, and we're being made to feel that it is important, and you're muted.
Okay. Yeah, I was just waiting. I do think there is something we can do. But the problem is we're looking at the wrong solutions. Like everyone's saying, we got to do something. And they're thinking the only solution is militarily. We got to invade. Well, that's not what we got to do. But there is some things that I think we as the U.S., we as U.S. citizens should be pressuring our government to do. Open up the borders. Let the Ukrainians come over. Let them move here. Let them either just stay here until the fighting's over or even move here permanently. Let them contribute to our economy. One thing that's blowing my mind as I'm watching this coverage is how much of the tech sector is either based in or has offices in the Ukraine. There are a lot of tech.
There's so many servers over there. It's a big rigged election. That's how it was rigged, is Ukraine.
But we need to let them come over. We need to open up the borders. I mean, you know, one of the funniest talking points to me right now is the conservatives saying things like, oh, Biden's letting everyone in. He's letting all the illegals in. Biden isn't letting any more in than Trump did. If anything, immigration is happening less right now than it was during even Trump's time. So let the people come. Let them in. I mean, one of the greatest sins of the U.S. before the buildup to World War II, during that buildup, was we weren't letting the Jews in. We were closing our borders to them. And now we're doing the same thing with the Ukrainians. And you have something personal attachment with that.
So at the end of last week's show, I told you about the five Ukrainian orphans that my family hosted, my in-laws last summer and Christmas. They went back January 15th, you know, with all the troops on the border. But, you know, my in-laws were kind of like, what do you think? I was like, I just can't imagine them being in Odessa and being in danger. oh me. So it's been a mad scramble for 2 weeks, a week, to figure out how to get them to safety, right? Like, there's realistically not a ton we can do, but here's kind of where it stands. The kids left 2 days ago they left Odessa, about 90 orphans left their orphanage to leave and to go to Lviv first and to go to Poland next. We just finally heard from them for the first time in a long while. They're in Poland. They have a bed. They're in a shelter of some kind. They're safe. That was the first concern. The second concern is, how do we get them here? If they claim refugee status in Poland, that will never happen because of the laws of Poland, because they're wards of the state of Ukraine. And so the minister of social something or other of Ukraine has legal guardianship over them. And if they just sign them over as refugees to Poland, they'll be ingested into the Polish orphanage system. And Poland will only allow you to adopt blood relatives. Well, we're not blood, but we have a vested interest in bringing them here to America for the duration of the war until it's safe to go back. Hopefully there's something to go back to. I am pessimistic about that being the case. But it's been a race against the clock because, you know, Lushenko's on TV 4 days ago showing the push towards Odessa. It's the major port city. They need to take the part of why he wanted to take Crimea 8 years ago is because of ports. So he has launched an offensive from the south and spread it towards Odessa because he wants to take those the two ports that are in Odessa. And there's like probably before the week ends up or early next week, there'll be massive shelling in Odessa. So it was important to get them out and trying to get them to safety. The orphanage, you know, fortunately they're not in the Northeast. We've got some contacts in Ukraine. We've got some contacts here, you know, families that wanted to adopt kids from Northeastern Ukraine can't get in touch with them anymore. Don't know what happens, probably safe, but no communications exist in some of those Northeastern parts. And they've just kind of like, you can't leave, you're stuck. So once the offensive on Odessa takes place, they wouldn't be going anywhere. So they're in Poland. Well, I want to thank Senator Todd Young's office for being incredibly helpful and responsive. I've been trying to reach several congressmen's office, you know, Congressman Trey Hollingsworth's office. We contacted them and nothing came out of that. You know, they said, go to a website and fill this out. We can set up a meeting for visa renewals in September, to which my mother-in-law was like, they'll be dead by then. What are you talking about? Like, well, this is just how it is. So go to HTTP. Click. Like, you're no help. So now we're talking to immigration lawyers. Our goal is to bring them here. I will be coming to the audience asking them to help us fundraise, because it's not just these orphans for our family. There's about 300 orphans that we have in this network of people that want to come here. You know, and to like bring the humanity to it, when the oldest was told kind of what was going on, he was like, can I bring my best friend? You know, imagine being him and like, you're going to a place that's safer. You have opportunity and comfort and a family, but you're leaving your best friend behind. You know, I mean, it's very sad. And, you know, talking to a missionary in Lviv, he's like, we're safe for now, but you have to understand there's 300,000 people that have come into the city. The numbers you're seeing are the people who have crossed borders into Romania, Moldova, Poland, Russia. These numbers don't reflect the amount of people that are in country still moving in a country of 41 million people. So the refugee crisis is insane, but... You know, I've been really impressed with the Polish and the way that they've dealt with these refugees. And I was completely unaware of what has been going on the Belarusian and Polish border, basically a war between the two countries. Because what happened with Belarus is Lukashenko basically rigged an election to be put in power. It was a Western-leaning country. Lukashenko took over. And now he's in charge, very Russian-aligned. And in order to piss off the... All right, you guys still there? It just blinked.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we're here.
So in order to tick off the EU, he's basically... used refugees as a weapon, literally. And he has been giving travel visas to people in Kurdistan and Iraq and Syria since he took over on travel visas. Come, like, travel agents from Belarus are in these areas going, come travel to Belarus. See it. It's beautiful this time of year. And then they are using the military to funnel them to the Polish border. And then, like, using the military to force them to cross the border with guns, like standing across them. And there's like massive battles taking place between the Polish border guard and these Iraqi Kurds trying to get into the country. And then they try to turn back and go back into Belarus, and they've got guns pointed at them on that side too. And they're all Muslims, and they're Kurds, and they're Middle Easterners, right? They're not white Christian Ukrainians. So there is a video called How Russia's Ukraine Invasion Began with Belarus that I'll put in, that is, frankly, it's just very shocking to see what the Polish government and what the Belarusian government are doing. And it really displays that double standard in a significant way. And for the YouTube viewers, I'll kind of flash it up here. It's by Vice. But it's sort of scary to watch the beginning of, you know, the video here, because Lukashenko is basically talking about how if war breaks out, it's going to be a nuclear war. And having the hindsight of this to kind of go back and look at it and watch these two argue is pretty shocking. But, you know, it's tear gas, it's people being pushed up against fences and guns being pointed. It's a real humanitarian crisis. And this is of our making. This is of the making of Russia, America, Assad, the invasion of Iraq. And we should be opening our borders to these people, to the Ukrainians, to the Afghanis, to Syrians, to Kurds. And we should be bringing people in to these, to live in America. And so you don't get the right to invade other countries, create refugees, and then say, you're not welcome here. That's insane. It's immoral. And, you know, so I don't just want... So basically, the senator's office said their visas may stand unless Biden acts. Because even if he put a bill on the floor, they probably could not, and South America, good point, our drug wars have caused all those refugees to come here. So even if a bill is put on the floor, Democrats and Republicans may not agree that letting Ukrainian orphans in is a good idea. So Joe Biden has to act and allow asylum in the way that he did for Afghans for R5 to come in. And so pressure needs to be put on Joe Biden to make that happen, to allow refugees in. It has to be done by executive order. It can't be done by legislative decree anymore. So while we're at it, let's let these folks in too. So I applaud the Polish, but I guess on the video, you guys can't hear me at all. So I guess correct. All you guys could hear the video. Okay. So sorry to YouTube, but you heard great content from me if you're on the podcast. So anyways, Vaughn's right. Let them all in. Open the borders. Let refugees in, especially the orphans, please.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't definitely wasn't trying to say we should only let Ukrainians in. We should be letting all the refugees in.
Yeah, I didn't think you were. I just think that was a great opportunity to kind of show people what's going on here.
It was. Yeah. And it's going to benefit us economically. I'm blanking on the name, but the guy, I just forgot his name. He made a great little graphic novel about that, about how immigration is a net benefit to the U.S.
He tore Ben Garrison. Every single... His name is Ben Garrison.
No, it was not Ben Garrison. I cannot think of the guy's name. Oh, it's going to drive me nuts. Wonderful, wonderful graphic novel he just put out about
Odie that. Wrote a great article back when the Wall Reader was about that, how it's actually, and just went step by step, like how monetarily it benefits the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a pretty big name libertarian guy. I just can't think of his name. I'm blanking. I'll remember it after the show's over.
Harry?
Well, personally, we should only get the Ukrainians that are over 6 foot tall, can hit a jump shot, or, you know, help out, you know, USA's volleyball team. You know, that's the only ones we should get. I don't know. We don't need them here. I think we should build a wall, keep them out. Well, this feels good.
I know, right?
You know what? Doesn't it feel great to hate foreigners again instead of each other?
We have a total shortage of volleyball players. I mean, there's plenty of people to work fast food.
Exactly. We have that. We need, you know, tall volleyball players. We need people who, if you can't hit a jump shot and you're tall, man, get on that volleyball court. Okay. All right. That's what we need. Okay. All right. We don't need these short Ukrainians here that can't do anything for us, you know, unless they play baseball. We need baseball players right now. Our baseball league is going down. You know, if they can play baseball and get out there, you know, what? I'm not the only one that's, you know, we're going to miss opening day because some millionaires can't agree to hit
with
a ball.
Billionaires.
Oh, sorry. Billionaires, right?
Billionaires and millionaires fighting over more money. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. All right. Final thoughts on, is this World War III? Yes or no, Harry?
I don't know. It could be World War III. It could also be Civil War at the exact same time and exact same spot you're in because of like the way, like, you know, new wars are having to start, you know, the cyber warfare and the simple aspect of like the propaganda fifth generational war.
Please,
like,
we no longer call it cyber warfare here. We call it cybering.
I'm not calling it that. I'm not calling it that. You're not calling. I barely want to call it cyber warfare.
Do people cyber anymore? That's such a not like late 90s term.
They kind of do. There's tons of different things for it. Like you can get on Meta. They even make some toys for that to help relive the experience. It's a lot of VR stuff, so you actually can touch stuff in VR.
See, there wouldn't be war if we were all in the metaverse. That's all I'm saying. Leave reality.
We would just have meta-based war. One of the key topics we're going to talk about that actually on a low-key wall episode coming up about like when war is turned into a game. You know what happens? Mm. What happens to the? You know what happens when war is a game? But I don't know. I doubt that we won't. I think people just use World War III because it's a good buzz. Like title, it gets people to read things, gets people to watch things. It's great for SEO. So when you see Spangle use it, it's great for SEO. Sorry, it's good clicky, you know. But
Harry, cybering.com is available.
I'm not buying that. I do own cyberloafing.ninja that I do own.
Cybering loafa.
Yeah. But I think it'll be later called World War III or just a war or something like that. It'll be called that for buzzy things later on. But I think, you know, how can I put this? It's going to be interesting to even watch it break down. I think it can escalate to type of World War III or something like that, that type of level. If you don't give Putin an exit strategy, an exit ramp, where does he get off? And when he does stop this, does he get any of this back? And if people are like, no, he can't get any of this back. You kind of have to. It's going to keep marching forward. I'm sorry. Like, it's not appeasement. It's just, if you stop here, we'll put everything back. Just stop. He's got to have a way to retreat. If you don't give him retreat, you put him on death ground. And once he's on death ground, they're going to fight till they die.
Yeah. Vaughn, World War III or nah?
I mean, as Harry made the point earlier in the podcast, it depends on how you define war. I mean, there are many ways in which we have been involved in a war with Russia for many years. There was the Cold War before the 90s, and now we have all of this, the
cyber
warfare going on. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's propaganda. There's hacking. I mean, you could even argue some people have that a lot of the what's that word? Where they encrypt your stuff and then they won't let you have it back unless you pay them money. Ransomware. A lot of that's coming out of Russia. Yeah, that's it. Thank you, Harry. I forgot the word. We could even argue that's a part of Russian warfare. I don't think we're going to see a kinetic world war like we had in World War II. Not because if he could, Putin wouldn't do it, but rather because I just don't think he has the ability. Today, Russia is not Germany from before World War II. They don't have the capability, I don't believe, to create that war machine like Germany was able to. And that's probably the only thing that's saving us from a kinetic World War III situation.
Joe here. Joe was one of my best friends in high school. Still a great friend. You know, joined the military. I know for a fact, he says it's called sexy now. I know for a fact Joe did some aggressive cybering back in his day. Trisha, World War III or no?
I'm going to lean towards no. Everybody pretty much laid out some good reasons. I know we all kind of think, oh, but what if, you know, China gets involved? And that's not even that likely. But, you know, I could be wrong. What I do worry about is if there's, you know, people send boots in the ground, you know, especially the United States, but even some of the European countries that will, you know, they're going to try to put in a new, you know, overthrow an election or put in a new leader. And then I think something like that might actually lead to a larger scale, like world war. So, you know, overthrowing governments and putting in, you know, new regimes is always, always, always a bad idea. So yes, please just let Putin go home and be crazy there.
Now, for my perspective, will there be a world war? This is the Citadel today with soldiers in a line that spells out UKR. So, yeah, hell yeah, there's going to be. No, I don't know. I don't think that there's going to be a world war. I don't think it will be like World War II. I just... Warfare is so different now that it's not with as many soldiers. It is a lot more asymmetrical. I do think that we will provide more Stinger missiles, more Javelin missiles. Those have been very effective. The Javelins, out of 300 Javelins that they had, 285 of them worked in taking down tanks and planes and other things. I definitely think that the United States government is going to end up supplying them with light weaponry like that, maybe even harder weaponry. Putin will definitely take that as an escalation. I just think it's inevitable that there's going to be skirmishes between American soldiers and European soldiers in some way versus Russian soldiers. I just don't think that the public will allow the images that we might see in the coming weeks to not go without some sort of heavier response. Now, does that lead to a full-scale world war where you in Omaha or San Luis Obispo are under attack? I don't think so at all. I think you're absolutely safe. You don't need to build a bunker. Now, the pessimist in me says, how did we bring down Soviet Russia? An arms race. We forced them to do military spending when they had a bloated deficit. Guess what? What if China is using Putin to do that same thing to us? So we have to start spending and spending and spending. This is Europe's problem. Europe has been anemic in carrying their load of the NATO budget. They have outsourced their security to us, and they need to take care of this. This is on them. So when the "we need to do more" crowd pops up, it's Europe, it's the European Union's problem. And I think Russia's very weak based on what we've seen. And I think it's very unlikely that we're going to see fighting outside of Ukraine. Joe, again, former military man, says, "We will not join a war unless China goes after Taiwan. Over 80% of our semiconductors are made there. Ukraine offers no economic benefit to join a fight other than a symbolic one." Symbols are pretty powerful, but I tend to agree with that. I think the American government is great at looking like they're doing something to satisfy the question of "we need to do more, what are we doing?" And they will propagandize it to make it look that they're being effective, that they're helping people when they're doing a limited amount. Look at the sanctions. Sanctions are not all that effective. Dan says, "And China will be watching how the rest of the world reacted and ready itself for the case." So I think that the Chinese are not going to act. I don't think they're ready. They're not ready to rise totally. They're very kind of weak in certain ways. And so I don't think China gets in on this. China can't afford, Joe says, to arm their troops fully. War would ultimately benefit them and culling the bloat of the population. And the reality is, trying to get soldiers onto Taiwan is incredibly difficult. So you see how hard it is for Putin in 2 weeks to get soldiers into Ukraine. They would have to put them on boats and hope that the Americans and the Japanese and the South Koreans don't bomb those boats. Go ahead, Harry.
The other thing is, Taiwan ain't Ukraine, because China is asshole. China has been fucking with everyone around them, and they're fucking with people who actually have military standing. India, reason why like India had kind of sustained and messing with Russia, because India buys a lot of weaponry from Russia because China fucks with India. If China does something like that and the world people go like doing that, India will start, will invade China as well. And Japan said once China moves on Taiwan, they move on Beijing. It's just Taiwan ain't Ukraine. The people actually care. Like, there's people who actually, like, well, I don't want to say it. There's different nation states who have so much at stake at losing Taiwan or just giving China openness to like the open sea and the open ocean.
Yeah, Jacob says China isn't playing the military game right now. So I agree. I think a lot of that is overbloated nonsense to try and prepare the people of America for action if we wanted to do something about it.
Right, and China has lost tons of money with this whole property value scheme that they have going on in their country right now, and they have also lost a lot of face internally, because one of the things that the Communist Party, the CCP, had kept talking about is that they do not meddle in other people's affairs, and they cannot be seen internally meddling with the affair of Russia going over Ukraine or something happening out there. And they lost a lot of different face because they actually had their Chinese embassy said, like, hey, if you're China, if you're Chinese inside of Ukraine, you put up your Chinese flags, the Russian army will leave you alone. Not the skakes. They're telling them to take their Chinese flags down and try to, you know, not be, appear to be at, you know, like from the Chinese government.
If I keep letting him go, he's going to keep going, guys. He's
that all sounds a lot like World War III, what Harry just
yeah.
said.
Yeah. Listen, I think it's unlikely, but I was super, super sad the other day. And Reagan's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I shouldn't know history. I wish I had been born a dumb person. I wish I hadn't read, you know, the lead up or listened to. I wish I had not majored in World War II documentaries with a minor in Dan Carlin's World War I history podcast, because you see these bureaucrats and diplomats and military men sleepwalking their way right into a major conflict. And all it really does take is for there to be an international incident and one side or the other to blow it out of proportion. I think that the chance is there. It's a low chance that it turns into a long term, full scale global conflict where you have evenly matched militaries. But I do think that there's going to be a war in Ukraine for possibly years between Russia and guerrillas basically in Ukraine being armed, just like Syria. I mean, we've seen it too many times in Syria and other places to not understand what's happening here. Like, the American military will be sending, you know, trainers, 10,000 trainers, before you know it, they'll be sending observers, all that kind of stuff. I do think that there's a chance that, you know, Article 5 of NATO is invoked at some point within the next few months if Russia doesn't completely collapse as a military in the next few weeks. There's no diplomatic solution here. It's about Russia deciding they're not going to do this anymore. I think you have lived with Donald Trump long enough to understand the psychology of Vladimir Putin. Donald Trump will never admit that he lost the election. It doesn't matter how many Republican paid for surveys and audits that they do. Nothing will change his mind that he won that he lost that election. Like, there is no amount of information, and there are people who are zombie-like who will never be convinced that he lost that election. And so Putin is exactly the same. He wants Ukraine by any means necessary. And it's going to be a real problem. So you just have to decide how much you want your tax dollars being invested, how much of your moral capital you want invested, and just keep your head on a swivel and make sure that you're not being tricked into supporting something that ultimately hurts people. But it's a very tough problem, guys. It's watching horrible images and knowing you can send Javelin missiles to help. Right. But does that then lead to something else? Because, well, then we need to send planes to do the no-fly zone. And then, well, this isn't working, so we need to send boots on the ground. Well, this isn't working, so we need to do X, Y, and Z. We need to bomb Russian territory. So, like, where's your line? Where's your red line for supporting and intervening in this Ukrainian conflict? So you're going to be pushed to choose a side very heavily. And you just have to draw your line in the sand. Yeah. And infrastructure for fuel, for planes. Buy flour. There is a real tightening. Like, this is 70% of the world's wheat that comes out of Ukraine and Russia. And so buy some flour and freeze it for a day. Take it out. It'll last you for months. Start prepping, Trisha. Trisha has like 300 gallons of gas. And she lives in an apartment.
I do think it's smart to prep right now, though. If you think about everything you just said, and on top of the fact that we just got off of a pandemic, and actually most of the economic hurt didn't particularly come from, you know, the actual or virus, but from government shutdown. So we're like, people are hurting really bad. Then, you know, the cost of fuel is going to go even higher. Then you're talking about flour. That does scare me a little bit, because that's generally how, you know, you're a student of history. That's how wars begin.
People in the reason that the Nazis were able to take power is because the middle class had been middle class and got robbed of everything and were so angry about it. And time and time again in history, when the middle class becomes poor people are used to being poor. The rich are going to stay rich. It's the middle class that, when they lose something, turns to radical authoritarians, usually, that are going to help give them safety. So, all right, everybody, thank you so much for joining us here on The Chris Spangle Show. Please go join 10 for 10. If you got something out of this, please share with friends. We appreciate you, and we will talk to you soon.